because once Alexander became the Persian king by ruling the Persian Empire, his Persian subjects wished to treat him as they would treat their king with an act of obeisance and proskynesis. To a Greek, that was an action that you only performed in front of a god. So even in the realm of gesture, we can see a kind of fundamental divide, and this one I won't deny, except that I will point out that the meanings of these gestures were different in the two cultures. To the Persians, the act meant showing honour to a superior. To the Greeks, it meant honouring a god. And you see automatically there the room for misunderstanding between the two cultures, even in something as simple as the meaning of a kiss. We can say confidently that this was a military society. The Persians regarded themselves as a warrior aristocracy. And yet, even here, we also again see something which will be fundamentally misinterpreted by the Greeks. Why? Because for the Persians, the signs of being members of this warrior aristocracy are that you are good at hunting and good at archery, and in particular good at doing these things on horseback. So you hunt on horseback and you fire your weapon, and if you're very good, you may even be good enough to turn around and fire as you're fleeing from the enemy. But to the Greeks, this is cowardly, because to be a real fighter in the world of Greece 500 BC is, of course, to be a hoplite, to be a heavily armed infantryman. So even though, really, the codes, the ideology of the two societies are very similar in honouring soldiers, the idea of what actually constitutes a soldier is very different in the two societies. The Persian Empire, because it covered such a vast area, was able to call upon military contingents from many, many different areas. And so to the Greeks, who were used to seeing one contingent of heavily armed hoplites fighting another contingent of heavily armed hoplites, the vision of the Persian army must have been absolutely astonishing. Because rather than seeing the same thing repeated in every contingent, instead you would see lightly armed horsemen from the steppes. You would see Greek and Carian heavy infantrymen serving in the Persian army. You might see camel drivers from Africa. You might see people with lion skins or with tiger skins draped over them. You'd see light-armed soldiers. You'd see people carrying wicker shields. All these different forms of armament, all these different types of fighting, all attesting in my mind to the extraordinary power of the Persian Empire in uniting these different units, but being seen by the Greeks as a symbol of something else, as something foreign and peculiar and strange, that there was nothing here that corresponded to what they saw as being the right way of fighting. Of course, the one thing that kept this empire united was that it was all commanded by men who were called the king's friends. These were Persian officers. If we turn aside from the aristocracy and from their fighting and from the military contingents, we find if we look at the culture created by the Persians that what we have here is evidence for an extremely refined culture. Now, in the eyes of the Greeks, it was too refined. It was effete. It was feminine. The Greek version of this was helped by the fact that, of course, the Persians wore trousers. Trousers? Please. Greeks wear a chiton or a himation, a large garment that surrounds them completely, and when they exercise, they do so heroically nude, not wearing trousers, which is something very suspect indeed from the point of view of the Greeks. But if we leave aside that Greek bias, what we have, in fact, is something very refined. Beautiful gold jewellery, which reflects the nomadic origins of the Persians from the steppes. And here their Achaemenid art often takes over the motifs of earlier Near Eastern arts, reinterprets it even more brilliantly. They were a great culture. The final aspect of Persian culture and life that I have to finish with is that of their monumental architecture, because it is here, in this architecture, and particularly in places such as Persepolis and the Great Hall, the Apadana, that we find the Persians expressing a monumental architecture that had not been a part of their earlier history, but which is something they have adopted from the ancient Near East. And at these sites, even as they were built partly by Greek workmen and craftsmen working for them, the Persians produced something quite extraordinary and magnificent. These halls, these palaces, are bigger, more elaborate than anything they have ever produced, and they are the lasting testament of the role and the rank of the Persians as the last of the great Near Eastern empires. After their confrontation with the Greeks, they will eventually be conquered by the Greeks, by Alexander. And at that moment, the Achaemenid dynasty will come to an end, and Persian history, at least as we've known it up until this time, will follow a completely different trajectory.
We hope you've enjoyed these lectures from our Great Courses series. Our courses are now available to order online. Visit our website at www.teachco.com. Or you may call our customer service representatives at 1-800-TEACH-12. That's 1-800-832-2412. Thank you.